Hello, this is Beth Ludwig from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from the July 2010 edition of Good Housekeeping Magazine. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. Our first article is called Do It Smarter, The Dishwasher Deconstructed. Rule number one. If the water can't reach it, it won't get clean. Here's how to load like a pro. Step 1. On the top rack, nestle cups and glasses between, not over, the rack tins to secure them without allowing water to become trapped and leave spots. Long, thin kitchen tools like spatulas should lie flat in the silverware rack, not point upright, such that they could stop the dishwasher arm for spraying. Lightweight plastic should rest between the tins or clips if the rack has them. Does this rack adjust up and down? Look for levers. Raising or lowering it may let you fit in a large serving tray. On the bottom rack, plates and bowls should face toward the center. Pots and pans should be angled the same way or placed fully upside down. Slip platters and baking sheets along the sides, not across the front. 3. In the utensil caddy. The goal, keep flatware from nesting so soap can reach all surfaces. Place forks with the prongs up and knives with the blades down, and alternate spoons, some up and some down. Soap smarts, store detergent in a cool, dry place, not under the sink. Powders can clump when damp. Gels get separate if they're kept in too warm of a spot. Even if you have soft water, use a rinse agent, which will help the water sheet off during the rinse cycle. Without it, glasses and plastics can emerge spotty. To control the cycle, you probably use normal and maybe pots and pans. Here's what else your machine can do. Quick rinse or rinse only uses about a gallon of water and keeps food from drying onto the dishes when the machine's not full enough for a full wash. Fast or quick wash cycles shorten the wash cycle, often to 30 minutes, so use them for lightly soiled dishes. Here's what not to machine wash. Do not put these in your dishwasher. Hand-painted china or glassware, or items that are glazed over designs. Do not put wooden bowls or utensils in the dishwasher. The wood can dry out and split. Do not put jars with paper labels. They may come off and get caught in the filter. Do not use cast iron in the dishwasher. Its seasonings could be removed. Do not mix loads of silver and stainless steel together. If the metals touch, the silver pieces may become pitted. Here's one last tip. Before a cycle, run the kitchen sink until the water's hot. With heated water in the pipes, the dishwasher can start cleaning from the get-go. Now for our Ask Heloise column. Here's the first question. I taught kindergarten and saved storybooks in my basement for my first grandchild. I've noticed they have a mildew smell, but I don't see any mildew on them. Do you have a way to freshen them up, or is it too late? Here is Heloise's answer. It's not too late, but you do need to air them out. Fan open the pages, sprinkle in some baking soda, and set the books outside in the sun until the smell is gone. This may take a couple of days, so bring them in overnight. Also, do not try this with antique or delicate books. Shake out the leftover baking soda and brush off the pages with a microfiber cloth. Or another way to kill mildew, put each book, without baking soda, in an open plastic bag and place it inside the freezer for a few days. Last try, try activated charcoal sold for fish tanks, which neutralizes some bad odors. Put some in a plastic tube or tub, like from margarine or yogurt. Poke holes in the lid. Place this and a few books inside a large plastic storage container for several days until your books smell fresh. Next question. Gunky glass. My glass container is not cutting through the gunk on my clear glass shower door. What's your advice? Here's her answer. The gunk is most likely soap scum, build up from body oils and conditioners. But it could also be hard water buildup, which will have a spotty look to it. After you take a shower, when the glass is steamy, which should soften the mess, pour a bit of cheap hair shampoo or liquid dish soap, both break down grease and oils, onto a plastic scrubby or sponge that won't scratch the glass. Apply and let it sit for 5 to 10 minutes. Rinse well and repeat this process if needed until the buildup is gone. Finally, don't forget, a squeegee is your best friend to prevent the gunk. Have one on hand to wipe down after each shower. Here's what Heloise is cleaning this month. Ceiling fans. We have ceiling fans with lights throughout our Texas home, including several on the back porch. The outdoor ones need the most attention because they get dirty with dust, cobwebs, and sticky grime. But all of them need a good cleaning every so often. When it's time, I get out the stepladder so I can reach the top of the blades and the motor housing unit, make sure the power is off, and lay down old newspapers or a sheet underneath to catch the falling dirt. For outdoor fans, I wipe away as much heavy dirt as I can with an old towel dampened with water. Indoors, I use a dry microfiber cloth around the edge of each fan blade to grab and hold the dust. Next, whether inside or out, I take a paintbrush to clear dust and cobwebs from the motor, then remove any glass light fixtures, which may hold dead bugs, and carry them to the sink. There I wash them with soapy water, rinse, and dry with a microfiber cloth, and return it to the fixture. To finish, I fill a bucket with a mixture of lightly soapy water and a light clean cloth, go over the fan blades and each pull chain, wipe the areas again with clean water and dry. And good health news. Well, toast to that. You don't have to be a summer bride to enjoy this news. A couple of glasses of bubbly are good for your heart. Champagne, like red wine, contains polyphenols, potent plant chemicals that help improve blood flow, which may translate to a lower risk of heart attack and stroke. Vitamin D gets an A, at least when it comes to preventing colon cancer. In a huge study of 520,000 volunteers in 10 European countries, those with the highest blood levels of vitamin D were 40% less likely to develop colorectal cancer than the people with the lowest levels. It's hard to get enough D from diet alone, so many experts now advise a daily supplement of 1,000 IUs. Now for our good family section. From kids to money, what you need to know. Summer protection plan. During downtime, nudge your kids to create a family history. Not only will it capture important info on your clan, but it's also a terrific way to get the generations bonding. You can go low or high tech. Your child can phone Grandma and take notes as they talk, or chat with Uncle Ted via iChat on your Mac or Google Voice, which works with existing phones, and record the conversation. Here are favorite questions to get the dialogue going, courtesy of StoryCorps, a nonprofit that records more than 30,000 stories of American life in the Library of Congress. Here are some questions your child could ask Grandma or Grandpa. How has your life been different from what you imagined? What was my mom or dad like when growing up? What's your very first memory of me? The last question, how would you describe a perfect day when you were young? A new smoking danger. Smoking has gone high-tech in a very frightening way. Electronic cigarettes, also called e-cigarettes or e-cigs, are battery-operated metal tubes with cartridges of nicotine-laced liquid, and they're unregulated in most states. Designed to look like traditional smokes, they produce a vapor, allowing them to sneakily bypass indoor smoke-free zones. Distributors claim that smoking or vaping e-cigarettes, which come in such kid-friendly flavors as strawberry and cola, is safe because they don't contain the same chemicals and tar as regular cigarettes. And some people are even using them as smoking cessation devices. But preliminary testing of samples last year by the Food and Drug Administration discovered that along with powerfully addictive nicotine, some cartridges contained carcinogens and toxic chemicals, like those used in antifreeze. Our biggest concern is safety and the potential appeal to kids given the flavors and the gadgetry involved, says Danny McGoldrick from the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. Also, electronic cigarettes are virtually at your kids' fingertips, available online or even from mall kiosks. So explain it to your child that e-cigs are potentially addictive products that are not a safe alternative to traditional tobacco. On-screen safety. Before the next family movie night, consider this. A recent study in pediatrics found that about half of the scenes in G and PG-rated films depict dangerous behavior, like foregoing seatbelts, jaywalking, and biking without helmets. Hollywood rarely shows consequences of unsafe behaviors, says a CDC etymologist and lead author of PostFlix. He says that rarely explains real-life ramifications and the characters and what happens to them. How to hype-proof your tween. Marketers want to sell stuff, lots of stuff, to your kid. Here's how to short-circuit their spend more message. This article is by Jeffrey Gluger. I spent $100 for a doll recently. Then I spent $100 for a second one. Both came fully costumed, but nonetheless needed a change of clothes, presumably to avoid the embarrassment of being seen in the same dress every day. That set me back another $60. One doll also required a pet, a plush puppy, that added $20 to the tabs. Because these are American Girl dolls, there'll be books to buy and in-store teas to attend, plus a brilliant marketing stroke that could, in theory, continue to the subatomic level, a line of mini dolls for the main doll to play with. By year's end, I figured I'll be out a cool $800, half of what my first car cost. And this is just the beginning. My younger daughter is 7. My older daughter is 9, in the early stage of the goldmine demographic marketers call the tweens. Roughly defined as preteen kids between the ages of 8 and 12, tweens are double scoop consumers. They buy dolls as happily as they do cosmetics and snap up transformers as much as they do clothes. Tweens are kids taking baby steps away from home, says Kit Yarrow, a professor of consumer psychology at San Francisco, who studies child's buying behavior. For their entire lives, their sense of we came mostly from the family. Now they need a new we group. Having certain things or wearing certain clothes is one way to create it, and it's a way to create corporate profits. According to marketers' estimates, the nation's nearly 20 million tweens spend around $50 billion annually. And that doesn't count the whopping $170 billion spent on them by their parents. Advertising drives the trend. The Children's Television Act of 1990 limits commercial time to no more than 10 minutes per hour during kids' programs on weekends and 12 minutes on weekdays. And recent rules require that any website promoted by a TV show be principally non-commercial and have limiting advertising. But that still leaves plenty of alluring commercials, magazine ads, internet pages, and banners, and sales links, and programs for iPhones that smuggle in on on-screen ads. The hard sell has even hit the classroom. Channel One, the TV news service seen in more than 8,000 middle schools and high schools, have aired ads since its launch in 1990. Peer pressure also plays a big role in kids' buying behavior. What all those ads shrewdly offer tweens, a world of stuff made just for them and their friends, is precisely what they crave as they navigate that tricky passage between the safe embrace of family and the freer but scarier universe outside the home. The right merchandise seems vital to easing the transition, says Yarrow, proclaiming them memberships of the new in-group. And parents contribute to the buy-in. I certainly never intended to drop all that money in the American Girl store, and I could tell by the looks of others' dads bellying up to the cash register that they didn't either. Part of the pull for me was that once my daughters learned about the dolls from friends who already had them, they could talk about nothing else. More important, the stuff in the store seemed so worthy. These weren't Bratz dolls with their oversexed miniskirt attitude. The American girls are a multi-ethnic mix of admirable, contemporary, and historical characters. My daughters are half Mexican, a heritage I want them to treasure. And when one of them chose to buy the Josefina doll, I beamed. Shopping here wasn't extravagant. In fact, it was almost virtuous. There's virtue lurking in even pricier stuff. A $500 iPad? A bargain if you think it helps your kids stay tech savvy. I talked to many other parents about why they sometimes spring for what's fashionable, even when they think doing so is possibly unhealthy. You'll recognize the range of motives. Some said they didn't want their kids to feel left out or suffer socially. Others reveled in giving their children what their own parents weren't able to afford to give. A few felt guilty for devoting too much time to work. One woman admitted that she sometimes spent money on her children when she couldn't spend time with them. There are days we're just worn out by the please, 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 can I have it campaign. And we buy something to keep peace. Marketers deliberately rally pester power to work on parents. No wonder we succumb. Yet it's vital that we stay vigilant, doling out material rewards consciously and carefully, making clear to our kids what really matters. We can start by reminding ourselves that not fulfilling our child's every desire doesn't make us bad parents, but good ones. Learning to master delayed gratification and cope with disappointment is a crucial step in kids' growth. Rules and limits make them feel secure. Kids respond well to boundary settings. It increases creativity and confidence. Parents need to get comfortable with not giving in. We might also consider the example we're setting with our own relationships to material goods and think about whether we're giving kids stuff when what they really want is our time and attention. The next step in hype-proofing our kids is teaching them to be critical thinkers. Though tweens are old enough to be seduced by advertising, they're too young to spot its tricks, promises of popularity, plays on their fears of ostracizing. Identification with stars. Kids that age aren't totally cognitively developed, which exploits the habits of kids. They don't have the mental resources to be shrewd about marketing information. One of the most powerful tools for helping kids understand marketing manipulation is simple conversation. My daughters sometimes watch football on TV with me. When the ads come on, I make a game out of seeing how fast they can guess what we're being urged to buy. Cars, they shout, or computers. Sometimes I've observed that they're sure a lot of people are trying to sell us stuff as we watch the game. We talk about product placement, too. Even small children quickly learn the difference between a TV show and a commercial. But what about the brand name gear that athletes wear and the sports drinks they gulp or the designer shoes like Miley Cyrus wears? Kids are likely to crave them. Before you buy something for your child, ask, why do you want it? If she says, because Miley has it, ask why is that important? Your goal isn't to make them like Miley less, it's to make them understand merchandising. You can have a more detailed discussion with older tweens about what a celebrity endorsement really means. Tell your kids that the Jonas Brothers of the world don't have to buy things for themselves. Stars receive boxes and boxes of clothes and may even be paid to wear them. The brand doesn't actually matter to them. You can cement the lesson with a trip to a terrific PBS website called Don't Buy It. It's on pbskids.org, which is simply enough for a first grader, but intriguing enough for a teen. It includes games such as Be an Ad Detective, which asks you to click on the hidden advertisement in a seemingly ad-free photo, like the Taco Bell symbol embedded on an Xbox game. Another site worth checking out is admongo.gov, admongo.gov, sponsored by the Federal Trade Commission, and it's dedicated to teaching tweens how to be informed consumers. When your kids' classmates begin bonding based on who wears Miss 60 or Lucky Jeans and excluding kids who don't, engaging websites and family chats may carry a lot less weight. In the tween focus groups, it was heartbreaking to see the amount of pressure kids are under to have certain things. Parents, by proxy, are under the same pressure. Your child is miserable. Adolescence is hard enough. Would it kill you to spend a few bucks to get your kid the right pair of jeans? The truth is, once in a great while, it wouldn't kill you, but try to use splurges as teachable moments. Talk to your child about what friends really are. Point out that a friendship that's dependent on so small a things as a label might not be a very meaningful one. Your kid may roll his eyes, but he'll get the message. Other practical tips from experts, including parents of tweens. Tell the teacher. If peer pressures to wear the right label becomes too great, speak to your child's teacher. Even if the school doesn't have a firm policy about clothes and brands, a classroom discussion can let kids examine their own ideas. Set limits ahead of time. Before you head out shopping, tell your child how much you're willing to spend and on what. Try procrastination. Sometimes pre-announced limits won't stop a kid who's fallen in love with something on display. Telling your pleading tween that you're leaving the store now, but you'll reconsider the request in a week. More often than you think, he says that the appeal of the item fades. This one worked when my daughters wanted $55 Michael Kors sandals. Provide pocket money. Give your child a small shopping allowance. One or two impulse buys look great in the store, but lousy at home can teach a powerful lesson about thinking carefully before putting down the cash. Limit temptation. Some parents discourage online commerce by barring computers from bedrooms and allowing kids to use only a family computer with a parent nearby. Remember also that you can use parental controls to lock out certain sites. Hit fast forward. Research shows that kids develop brand preferences as toddlers. They don't say, "I want a hot chocolate." They say, "I want a Nestle's." And they're getting that from TV. So just turn it off. Try an in-store switch. One way to combat label lust is to stick with generic products whenever possible. Admittedly, easier to do with peanut butter or orange juice than with jeans and sneakers. Still, the less enthralled you are to labels, the less your kids will be. A creative trick when you're shopping for clothes is to pick a store that sells both designer names and store brands. Have your kids turn around while you place a pair of pricey pants or shoes next to a bargain pair, but cover up the labels. Then ask them which they prefer. At least half the time, they'll pick the store brand. When they do, ask them if they're 100% sure, and then, when they say yes, uncover the label. The logo will lose its luster fast when they realize that at first they didn't like even what it was attached to. Admittedly, this ploy can backfire with the tween choosing the pricey brand. If it does, compare price tags. When a designer item costs double, you have good reason for putting your foot down. No parent ever fully prevails in the commercial war of the tweens. And I'm not under any illusion that my wife and I will be different. Moms and dads are in an arm race with the bottomless needs of their tweens and the bottomless dollars of Madison Avenue. And it's impossible to win every battle. It's imperative, though, to win as many of them as you can. Today, it's your money your tweens are spending, but before long, it will be their own. Now is the time for them to learn to spend wisely. Sometimes saying no is the greatest gift you can give them. Ask the expert, is it safe to eat a food after its use date? Answer, probably as long as it's been stored and handled properly, and there are no signs of spoilage, but it might not taste as good. Any date stamped on the product refers to the food's quality, not its safety. It's a recommendation from the manufacturer. The FDA mandates use-by dates only for infant formula and infant baby food. The types of dates you'll see are use-by. It's the last date by which the manufacturer recommends the food be consumed, so as it's still to be at peak quality. If it says best if used by, indicates the quality may decline after that date. Sell-by date tells stores how long to display the product. For more information on these terms, go to goodhousekeeping.com/food-shelf-life. Did you know? Did you know that 59 years ago, the creators of the Curious George books, the husband and wife team of artists H.A. Ray and writer Margaret Ray, fled the Nazi occupation of Paris in 1940. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of From Soups to Nuts. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Beth Ludwig, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.